It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Well, hello and welcome to the program. Scott, glad you're back. You need to sell everything you got and buy gold.
Again?
Oops, I'm not supposed to say that. We missed you, Scott.
Well, thank you. I missed you, too.
How's the little one?
Good. Much better.
Good. Very good. Well, I let everybody know, you know, you're not just a CFA. You're not just a hardworking Holland Financial person. You are also a dad.
That is a fact.
And you pitched in.
Did I ever.
We're gonna have a Scott fan club. All these women are going to be saying, Scott Connor.
He's not interested.
No, it's a good answer. Very good answer. All right. Well, let's get to some serious stuff.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
It's good stuff.
Yeah.
It's not just serious, but it's good.
Yeah, particularly for Tuesday's market. Dow up 193 points, S&P up 21 points. NASDAQ feeling the benefits of a little bit of a resurgence in Apple, up 54 points across 3,000. Dow back solidly above 13,000, so that's good news. Gold just about flat. Oil up a little teeny tiny bit to 104. It's pretty much where it's been for a while. And tens at 2. So pretty good market for Tuesday, led by materials and techs. We like to see that. I want to talk to you a little bit about financial services and some of the rally that we're seeing there. Apple News, Apple back up above $600 after Tuesday's trade, after 5 straight days of losses. I was watching it closely Monday from my sofa.
I was going to ask you if you tuned into the program when I did it solo. I gave the fastest 5 seconds in finance.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
I'm afraid I missed it.
All right. Well, I did this long dissertation. I had 3 or 4 colleges and universities call me and said I could have an MBA.
Is that
on
right?
On the spot, yeah.
That's terrific. So good news from Apple. Coca-Cola earnings, you know, we're deep in earnings season now already. Coca-Cola earnings topped revenue forecasts, so that was good. Earnings and revenue. Fellow Dow component Johnson & Johnson's beat expectation. We're going to start to get into the pharmaceuticals pretty quickly here.
Do they do it in order of industry? Or
no, it's just all a mishmash.
Okay.
I mean, there are some traditions, like the financials have a tendency to go first. We're starting to get a little bit heavy in techs right now. We have Intel and, you know, so there are some traditional things.
Now, explain for our listeners. I think a lot of people say, I have no idea what you're talking about. You say earnings season.
You know?
So every quarter, all the publicly traded companies have to announce their earnings.
They have to
report to the SEC. They have to file all their stuff, and then they make these big public announcements to get everybody on their conference call and basically say things are great no matter how things are going.
Generally speaking.
Okay.
Or they say, everything was great for the last 3 years. This is our one bad quarter, and everything's gone wrong, but everything's going to be fine after this again.
And we're going to clean everything out
right.
Okay, so every quarter they report the earnings. So when we talk about earnings season, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and we're in it now. Generally speaking, it's, you know,
the first couple weeks of April.
Yeah, it starts with Alcoa the second week after the end of the quarter, and it'll go on for about 4 weeks.
Okay.
Now, there are earnings basically every day that the market is open, but this is really the bulk of it. Most of the S&P 500 companies and pretty much any publicly traded company that you can name will announce earnings in the next little bit here.
Okay. How many are there?
How many publicly traded companies are there?
Yeah, you have a ballpark on that?
Well, the Wilshire 5000 is the broadest
right there.
Index.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's most of them.
Okay. So about 5,000 publicly traded companies that were going to report their earnings.
Yeah.
And so a lot of them don't, obviously, and a lot of people don't cover every one.
Yeah, for sure.
But some of the big boys and the ones that are notable. Okay.
Yep. So we're in the midst of it now. One of the things that we have talked about on this show that I've been looking for to really sort of confirm the market recovery or resurgence or rally or whatever you want to talk, however you want to title it, is to see some strength in the financial services sector, in the big banks. And I think we're starting to see that. We had a good number from J.P. Morgan on Friday last week, and we had a good number from Citigroup, believe it or not, and a good number from Goldman Sachs, both of whom said, you know, revenue's a little bit short, but profits are really good. We've done a great job of cutting expenses. Goldman Sachs even raised their dividend. So
that's what I was going to ask you. I thought I saw a report on that.
Yeah, Goldman Sachs did. Citigroup is hoping to be able to reinstate their dividend because, you know, the Fed's not letting them right now. But we're really seeing some good news from the earnings announcements of financial services companies, which I'm really, really happy about because we have to have participation from those companies in order to really make this rally stick, I think. So good news there.
I'm enthused.
Yep. President Obama unveiled a $52 billion program to strengthen federal supervision of oil markets. Had you heard about that?
Yes, I have. I have a little sheet on this. And is this really going to do any? I mean, first thing I thought, and I hate to be so jaded, but I'm like, we have a free market system that's worked for how long with the trading of commodities?
Yeah.
Do we really need to step in at this moment to rein in these reckless, mean-spirited oil traders?
Right. Well, let us also not forget that natural gas is at an all-time low, and a lot of the reason for that is because speculative traders have pushed the price down.
So should we put something in place to stop them from doing that?
I mean, I think that is the definition of a free market. You know, if one price goes up, one price goes down, that's how it goes.
I've been reading some of those same reports and analyses of the president's speech, which he did at 11 something on Tuesday. And
that's right.
I think everybody's going baloney, 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 except point number five, which is require a higher down payment when you do place a trade. And explain that a little bit for our listeners, how
well,
that works.
Well, that's the margin requirement, okay. And it is really, really similar to a down payment. So basically, you can trade futures contracts, not the actual, what they call the spot, not actually, you know, the commodity itself, but the futures contract on the commodity. And you have to have a certain amount of your own money in that trade. You can borrow
You can borrow the rest.
But the more money you have in there, the less money you have to leverage and borrow on other things. So it really reduces volume. The higher that down payment is, the more it reduces volume and the less speculation people are willing to take because they have more of their own skin in the game.
Okay, so it shortens the rubber band.
Yeah, exactly.
It keeps it from going wild or stretching out real crazy.
Yeah, but exchanges already have the ability to change that. So if the exchanges see
that... So if the exchange, in doing their thing and managing that particular activity on that exchange, thinks they should do that, they do that.
And they have.
They don't really need this overreaching regulatory...
Yeah, the authority already exists there within the market itself. The question really is whether or not the government should be involved in it.
So should the government step in and micromanage that regulatory activity?
Right.
That's the question.
Right, and who do you trust in a futures pit, a futures trader or a government bureaucrat?
I think they're going to create like a big backpack that there's a regulator that's on the back of every trader.
Yeah, that'll help.
And they have to carry them around all day. I think most people see this as being somewhat politically motivated. So, oh my God, that was one heck of an eye roll. Are we out of time, Lisa? Okay, Lisa says, what are you guys doing? We're going to take a quick break. Scott's going to rest those eyeballs and his voice, and we're going to come right back. Stay tuned.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read, you'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Now it's time for a breakdown from Finglish to English.
back and we're breaking it down with the rested and ready Scott Connor.
Yeah, you know, we have also talked on this program about Bank of America and how they have been, you know, they, for a while there, they went on a buying spree. And if the company was for sale or even kind of for sale, they went ahead and bought it. They bought Countrywide, Merrill Lynch. And we've talked about whether or not that culture of Merrill Lynch is working in with Bank of America. Are they going to have to spin it off or do a tracking stock? Well, a report out on Tuesday says Bank of America is discussing internally a potential sale of its non-U.S. wealth management business.
I did see that, and I saved that, and I was going to talk to you about it, but you beat me to it. That's good. There it is. Yep. So what do you think? What do you make of that was going to be my question. I wrote my note. Ask Scott, what do you make of this sale of the non-U.S. American Merrill Lynch stuff?
Well, it's not an insignificant thing.
It's $3 billion, right?
Yeah, in assets in...
In revenue?
In revenue.
So it's $90 billion in assets.
In assets under management, that's right. So it's not an insignificant thing at all. Bank of America always looks like they need money. You know what I mean? They look like your relative that just needs anytime you see them, they're going to hit you up for money. That's what Bank of America looks like to me. Now, this may be sort of something that they're just sort of throwing out there to see how the market reacts, and then they'll follow it further. It might be a complete rumor. It's pretty.
Well, riddle me this. The thing that just struck me with this article was that $3 billion in revenue. Now, maybe I'm getting a couple things wrapped up in there, but $3 billion in revenue on $90 billion in assets, that's a hefty fee.
It is, but I think that probably includes some investment banking, too.
Okay, it's not just the asset management services. Okay.
Yeah, so we'll see. But I mean, but to me, it still looks like Bank of America is that just that company that just they just can't get any security underneath them. They just don't have enough money in the bank to be able to do what they want to do.
No pun intended, right.
Yeah, so they're constantly peddling something to try to get some of their money back.
Well, they can't decide who they're going to be. And it's okay, we're going to buy this, we're going to buy these different companies, and then they got to start selling them off.
Right. Yeah, so we'll see with Bank America.
So you're not inspired.
No, and you know, we have recently added to some of our financial services sector in our more tactical portfolio, but that particular stock is one that just doesn't look healthy to me. Housing news, U.S. March housing starts fell, new building permits up a lot.
Okay, so what does that mean? People are pausing, things are just still ramping up?
Well, it's an interesting number because, you know, we have had really strong housing starts. Now, there's a really huge distinction here. If you have a permit, that doesn't mean you have to build a house. But if you build a house, that means you have to have had a permit. So a lot of times permit numbers will be really high, but none of those permits actually get built on. It's just like sort of making a reservation and not going to the table. But remember, the weather has been so balmy in the Northeast throughout the winter that a lot of housing was being built earlier in the season than it would be. So it could just possibly be that a lot of the houses that are normally announced in March have already been built or started, and they were announced in previous
months.
Okay,
so they got the permit and they did the work early.
Yeah, they just did it early because weather allowed them to. New building permits surged quite a bit. However, home builder sentiment down quite a bit. That is a diffusion index.
Lisa, what happened?
No,
you weren't ready.
I'm keeping moving. The three components of the index, which are sales expectations, current sales, and buyer traffic, all three of those down. It's a diffusion index based on 50. The level right now is at 25. So that tells you that home builder outlook is pretty thin.
Bleak.
Yeah, it's bleak for sure. And then we're going to talk a lot about Spain on Thursday because they have a huge auction coming up, a 2- and 10-year auction. But also short-term debt sale. They sold 2 billion euros of 12-month bills and 1 billion euros of 18-month bills. And sales came in, a lot of volume, a lot of demand, but yields pretty high, 2.62% on the 12-month. Previous auction was 1.4 and 3.11 on the 18-month, up from 1.71.
Well, what I'm seeing is that a lot of commentators are saying, well, if that's the rates for those, then that means that we should be looking at around 6% on their 10-year. And since you missed it, I talked at length about Spain yesterday.
Oh, excellent.
And it was a very good analysis, by the way. I do say so myself.
Sure.
But one of the things that I shared is that we've really got to watch the 10-year.
Yeah.
Because, you know, these shorter term, still, it could be that people are saying, okay, look, we don't think they're going to go anywhere for the short term, but the longer term is going to be a much more of a stronger indicator of where they are. And again, the thing that makes Spain so tricky for the European Union, I've been updating my report, Scott, on kind of keeping track of the countries around the world.
Yep.
And so Spain has a 2011 estimate 1.4 trillion in GDP. And they are part of the European Union, and they're on the common currency, and they are a member of NATO.
Yeah.
And so, but they're not part of the G20, which is interesting. They're, if you look down my list, you see that they're not, if you look at the biggest countries, they're skipped. So they get skipped right over.
Yeah, they skip a handful of them.
Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. So they skip right over in terms of the G20. Well, if you go down the list from one to down the list and you get down to the $1 trillion club, Turkey's the last one in the $1 trillion club. They're the only ones skipped in that list. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. You know what? Okay, Lisa, we have to take another break. We're going to take another quick break. I got to ask you about it. I've been saving this for, it seems like, a week. So I want to talk to you about BlackRock and what they're doing with shortcutting the street. So all right. When we come back, more analysis and more comments. Stay tuned.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 p.m. on WESH Channel 2. If you had a serious health issue, wouldn't you want a second opinion? Is your financial well-being any different? Make sure your retirement plan is the best it can be for your situation. An independent financial advisor can review key elements like stock market exposure, diversification, and fees. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
All right, we're back. Hey, you know what? Hold on, Scott. I want to go back to this oil thing for a minute. Let's see here. Okay. Gas prices have gone up 50 cents basically since January. Everybody's feeling the pinch. Middle East, supply disruptions, and then we've seen some easing. But the president was, let's see, no, this was the White House statement.
Yeah.
At a time when American consumers are feeling pain at the pump, it's critically important to ensure that illegal manipulation, fraud, and market rigging are not contributing to gas prices. Isn't that already happening?
Yeah, if it's illegal, they already have a regulation for it, right? That's the definition of illegal.
Yeah.
There's a law against it.
Okay. I didn't get that, but you've explained it for me. And speaking of oil, you know the latest thing now that the Iranians are doing with the ships? You read that article?
I didn't see that.
There was a big article out talking, Reuters had, that what's going on right now is as these sanctions get tighter and tighter on Iran, now what they're doing is they're going stealth mode. They're turning the switch off for navigation where they can track them. And most of the ships now are just going all over the place. Now, of course, you know, it's not like the United States can't keep track of that.
Yeah.
You know, we can find a basketball in the ocean. So, but that's their gimmick now, or their trick, is they're turning all the lights off and they're running dark.
I understand the unrest domestically in Iran is getting worse and worse and worse. They have so many problems.
Well, that's the whole point of this whole thing, is that the clampdown. And the thing that is disappointing is countries that we would like to have friendships with, like China, they're taking the oil. And South Korea, which is supposed to be a friend, they're allegedly taking oil. So yeah. I thought it was kind of funny that they've turned the... Tom Baudet would not be happy. We'll leave the lights on for
right.
you know? Motel 6, anyway. So, okay, speaking of turning the lights off, BlackRock. Okay, BlackRock, who's BlackRock?
Well, they were a huge privately held investment banker until not too long ago, then they went public.
Okay.
And they're huge asset managers, venture capitalists.
They got mutual funds.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff.
Okay, so they're big in investments. Well, they're looking for a way to bypass Wall Street.
Yeah.
To where they would basically have these groups that they would trade like in-house trading.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's a big article in Wall Street Journal talking about it. So I guess the question is that good or bad for the investor?
I think it depends, really. I think it makes it an efficient market because you take the broker out of the middle. The broker's got to take a piece, right? But I also think it reduces some visibility, and visibility is important. It's one of the things that we talk about with bonds all the time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lack of visibility is detrimental to customers, to clients.
I mean, people still need an investment advisory firm like what we do,
right?
And you're managing our portfolios, and we're making sure we do a good job for our clients. But
this, cutting out a layer is beneficial.
Yeah, it is. You keep the cost low, and of course, that's what the Fidelities of the world and the Vanguards and all these different people saying we can manage the money cheaper,
right?
Or we'll manage the piece that your investment advisor gives us cheaper. But the thing that I share your concern, Scott, and what concerns me is that you can have these, you know, you don't really get a true read of what's happening. You know, we being able to say, well, the market's up 1% may not have as much significance if there's a lot of stuff being traded under the table.
Yeah, if there are other markets that you can't see, then who's to say which market is the most
legitimate?
Then
who knows?
Yeah.
Now, that's where maybe 52 million or billion, well, I think it's, we'll find out how much it really is for that new regulatory reinforcement, but that's where it needs to go. I don't like that. I think that's something to be careful about. You haven't said anything about QE lately. What do you think? QE or not QE?
I think not.
I think not, too, and inflation's starting to percolate more, and I think they've got to be careful now. I think the first step is the Fed's going to have to back off doing any more of the bond buying and literally printing money and buying bonds,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
They have to, because they're increasing the money supply, which is going to cause dollars to be worth less.
Right.
And what does that do to oil?
Yeah, it makes it go up, no question about it.
So there are
especially
consequences.
Since it's still traded in dollars, which I don't understand. But
is it our advantage that it is? I guess it is.
I think it depends.
True. If our dollar is gaining a lot of strength, yeah. Then it's not, is it?
Right.
That would be interesting if it wasn't the dollar denominator or so.
It certainly would take
heavily.
Some volatility out of it. I mean, if you traded it on a basket of currencies, that's diversification.
That
right?
would eliminate the currency impact.
Right.
I mean, and then what you'd have is supply and demand and expectations about future prices.
Right, and whether or not that's advantageous depends on which way your currency is moving compared to other currencies.
Any new thoughts on this fast-tracking with the jobs bill on the IPOs?
Everything I have read about the jobs bill from anything internal, specifically the CFA Institute, RIA market groups, things like that, is almost universally negative on the jobs bill.
Yeah, because 90% of the companies, CFO Journal, Bobby saw that article, CFO Journal said that 90% of the companies seeking to go public in the United States would fit in this description.
Yeah.
So it would also create kind of a dark pool or a, you know, because what would happen is these companies could go through the going public process with a lot of confidentiality up front.
Yeah.
And not as much public disclosure.
Right, and we just talked about how more transparency is better for investors. You just have more information to make a sound decision with. I think it's something that we'll talk about 5 years from now and regret.
Which doesn't make sense that they would lighten the regulation on that, and then we're over here trying to crack down on future oil traders.
Yeah. Well, I mean, oil is an important thing to talk about right now.
Okay. Well, another important thing to talk about, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We got to talk about what Argentina did. Okay, stay tuned.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
You hear that? Scott says you can't just take people's companies. We're going to talk about this. This is amazing. Okay, what year is it?
Maybe you can. I don't know. Maybe
it's 2012, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe they know something we don't. Spain is... Their heads are about to come off collectively.
Yeah, they have enough problems.
They've got enough problems. Well, yeah, you missed it. I'm gonna get you a copy of yesterday's tape.
All
okay,
right.
Unemployment in Spain.
Yeah,
18 to 25.
Yeah, I know.
50%.
I know it.
It's crazy.
Overall, 20% is the headline number.
Yeah, 25% for all of Spain. Okay, so get this: the government of Argentina seizes a company. YPF, and it's the South American nation's biggest oil company, and the largest shareholder was a Spanish energy giant called Repsol.
Yeah, Repsol's shares I know were down quite a bit Tuesday.
So Madrid made a phone call.
Yeah.
And said, "What are you doing?" And they answered the phone in the president's office for Argentina. And said, "She didn't want to talk to you. She's angry." What in the world?
I don't know. You can't just take
apparently
take companies.
You can. This is what they call, the fancy word is nationalization, yeah. Of your industries. Now, the thing that obviously, if it was an Argentinian, saying that correctly, if it was a company that was only in Argentina and they nationalized it, that's a different issue.
Yeah.
But
well,
this
we've talked about the Greeks having to nationalize their own banks, but that's their own bank.
Right. Well, and you could say that we did the same thing with General Motors,
yeah.
Except that it was a bailout. But
right.
you could say, well, it's kind of the same thing. But they basically just take ownership.
Yeah, you can't just take somebody else's company.
Didn't Chavez do something like
this?
Yeah,
there's so much oil down there. And he has threatened, he has nationalized everything. He'll just go to farms and say, hey, this land is ours now. Sorry about your luck. So it's not an uncommon thing, although to take another country's asset is a different thing.
Well, Spain is definitely bigger. According to my list, Spain's at, and of course, GDP doesn't always equal political or, it does economic clout, but maybe not political or militarily. $1.4 trillion for Spain, and we go down the list to Argentina. They're about half the size, $700 billion. So economically, they're half the size. So maybe they're just trying to balance the balance sheet.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure we have not heard the last of that.
Well, speaking of South America, and I really don't have a tie-in. Think of something economics, but Secret Service.
What a mess.
That's all we'll say. That's good. We'll leave it right that. I just think there's just...
That's not the last we've heard of that either.
No.
Every time I see a headline, it's worse.
Something's going on in South America. I don't know. All right. What else do I have for you? Oh, here we go. Listen to this. Scam, tax filings, emails for people. To our listeners, if you get an email, if you get an invitation to a social website, Lisa's already nodding her head. She knows what I'm going to say. The IRS does not communicate with email. So if you get something, just delete it. And you can even forward it to the IRS at phishing@irs.gov, phishing with a PH on the front.
You know, our friend Kevin said that he was informed by the IRS after he sent in his return a couple of years ago or last year. The IRS contacted him by phone and said, hey, it's the IRS. It really was. They said, we think somebody's fooling around with your tax return, just so you know about it.
Yeah. Well, that's the big gimmick. And this is why you want to file. If you think, you know, everybody loves to get a refund. There's something... We all like lumpy mail. That's what it's called. We all love, it's instilled in us in our American culture. We love presents. We love Christmas. Even if somebody is not a Christian, they love the Christmas holiday. And so we all like getting something. So it feels good just to get that refund. Well, here's the thing. If you've got a refund coming, now it's a little late for me to say this now, but, you know, it's something we've said on the show. If you've got a refund coming, go ahead and file that. Don't wait, because what they're doing, and we're talking about a lot of money. I think it's in the billions with a B, that people getting your refund, stealing it, submitting for a refund, and that's probably what happened to Kevin.
Yeah.
So, all right. So what do you think with retail sales? Last thing I want to, before I let you go, Scott. Retail sales up, but there's a lot of mixed bag. It's like all these different industries have different things going on. It's not one big groundswell.
Yeah.
We've got a wave over here that's high. We've got another one over here that's high, but there's not this overall rising of the market.
Yeah, and there's also been a lot of price cutting and slashing, you know, which is not necessarily healthy for the corporation that's on the other side of that retail sales. I think it's good that there's enough confidence out there that people want to spend money. That's a good sign. They're not hoarding cash. That would be a terrible sign. Although I don't know that it's something that is just uniformly positive across the board.
Okay. Well, that's very good. I think we're about out of time, and I think we'll... Oh, last thing. This one I've been saving. Okay. This I think we should find a way to use in the elections.
All right.
Okay. It's called the Section 1001. Title 18, Section 1001 of the United States Code is a tool that basically says... It's a law that says you can't lie.
All right.
And so it's a Department of Justice uses it a lot of times when they're prosecuting. And so
who do they use it against?
They can use it against criminals, people that basically if it makes it a crime to knowingly make a material false statement in the matters of a federal jurisdiction or a case. So they use it to charge people a lot of times when they are trying to get the bigger fish. And so I wonder,
like perjury, right?
Yeah, it's like perjury, but it's not in court. It's out of court. So it's perjury out of court. That's good.
Yeah, yikes.
Yeah. So it's used a lot by the Department of Justice. Well, I think we should find a way to apply 1001 to presidential elections.
I'm for it.
All right. Well, there you have it. All right, Lisa, we out. We're out. Thank you for joining us today, ladies and gentlemen. We'll talk to you next time.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.